We do have a quorum, so the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will come to order. First order of business, the minutes. Representative Fenton, would you like to move the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So moved.
Madam Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I'd like to point out one correction.
Okay.
Second column of members present. I realize you've had a number of new members, but I'm not familiar with a Sanders, David. I'm familiar with a Sanders, Tim who's sitting across the table from me, but...
Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Sanders, is your first name not Dave?
Never has been, Madam Chair.
All right. All right. We will change that. We will change that to Tim. Thank you. Are there any other corrections? All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Minutes approved. Okay. Next order of business. You should have this in your packet. This is a report. The blue, and I just come with it.
Yeah.
There's two of these. This is a report from the independent auditor, and. The report basically says that there are no deficiencies in internal control over financial reporting, that they would be considered to be a material weakness, and that's an accounting of the House budget. So basically no issues with the House budget. And Jim Reinholtz is here to answer questions if anybody has any on that. Maybe you could just say a word about it, Mr. Reinholtz, and obviously introduce yourself to the committee.
Madam Chair, Jim Reinholtz, the Controller for the House of Representatives. By statute, the House is required every 2 years to do an audit, to hire an outside independent auditor. The one that you have was for the fiscal year 2014. Chairman Pepin gave the important quote, they found nothing wrong in the way auditors talk. Saying that there's absolutely nothing wrong is about as good as you can get. They never say anything is great or good. So, but I would be happy to answer questions. And probably, if anyone really has some, just contact me outside of committee, and I would be happy to answer questions on the audit at another time.
Okay. Any questions? No? Now, there's nothing that no action that needs to take place today, but if you could just stay at the table, Mr. Reinholtz. The next order of business is the recount payment. If you could just explain that, Mr. Reinholtz.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the House has a policy on paying of legal fees when there is a recount conducted automatically as required by statute 204C.35. That requires a recount. When a vote is within a small margin, a specified margin in the statute. The House policy on payment of legal fees allows the House to make those with Rules Committee approval. That's why this issue is before the Rules Committee. There was only one recount in the last election on a House race that was automatically called for, and that was in District 48A. You should have in your packet a memo addressed by me just indicating what the legal fees here are for. It was addressed to the Chair, Joyce Pepin, on February 9th. You also then would have a short summary spreadsheet that I prepared that shows the legal fees that were billed or requested payment on by Jacobson, Buffalo, Magnuson, Anderson, and Hogan. Amounted to $6,127, 29 and a half hours. The rate by House Rule Committees, the rules are no more than $200. I did check through the invoice from this, and it is at $200. Expenses are allowed, and as shown on the summary, they're $227. The Lockridge, Brindle, and Nowen had billed $6,060 for 30.3 hours at the 200-hour rate. Expenses $48.89, total of $6,108.89. If there are any questions on that, the invoice, I believe, were closed. And what we would need, there are two motions, Madam Chair, that would give me the authority to pay these bills.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions on either of these bills? Okay. Seeing none, I will move the 2015 Seltzer motion. Any discussion on that one? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. And I will also move the 2015 Stensrud legal bill. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is approved. Thank you. And then the next item of business is the permanent rules. And I'm going to have, thank you, Mr. Reinholtz. We'll have Mr. McCormick. He's here. Where is he? Oh, sorry. I don't know. I was thinking you're out there. Will Mr. McCormick go through the rules?
Members, I'm going to walk through the rules and just highlight the changes. The base for the rules is the rules from the last session. We're updating these for the 89th session of the legislature. The first change is to Rule 1.01. The time that the House convenes used to be at 3 o'clock, and now the default time for convention is 3:30. The second change is Rule 1.10. Under Rule 1.10, the former version required three copies of every bill that's introduced. Because the third copy wasn't needed, we've reduced that to two copies. The third change is Rule 1.15, disposition of Senate files. Disposition of Senate files, this change clarifies that the chief clerk can receive Senate files and compare those when they come over with House files without a motion of the body. This is a technical change in how the wording of the rule is laid down to conform with current practice. Rule 2.42 is a new rule. It is on page 8 and carried through to page 9 of the rules draft in front of you. This is a rule that the House has never had, but the Senate has and has practiced with. It sets up ethical standards for lobbyists who appear before House committees. It requires that a lobbyist is in compliance with the lobbyist registration laws. It requires that a lobbyist discloses to a committee on whose behalf they speak and the purpose for their appearance. Requires that the lobbyist not knowingly, directly or through a third party, furnish false or misleading information and material to the House or to its committees, subcommittees, and divisions. It empowers the Committee on Ethics to investigate a complaint by a member of the House if the complaint comes in writing under oath, received before adjournment, and applies the investigatory procedures of the rule on the Committee of Ethics. The complaint and proceedings are private until probable cause is found, or unless the lobbyist themselves chooses to make the complaint public. The next change to rules is Rule 3.22. The change on 3.22, I believe, is on page 11 of the rules in front of you. This adds a new clause. Currently, a concurrence of a majority of the whole House is required to adopt an amendment increasing an appropriation or a tax. New clause B states that an amendment to an amendment may not increase a tax or a fee unless the underlying amendment increases the tax or fee in question. The next change is Rule 3.34. Rule 3.34 was stricken when we adopted the temporary rules of the House because I think the determination had been made that reference of bills could also happen under Rule 1.11. The next change is Rule 4.03, and this is a technical change to update the names of major finance and revenue bills to the new structure of the House. The next substantive change is Rule 4.11, which is a new rule, and you'll find that new rule on page 16. And this rule is word for word the exact wording of the Minnesota Constitution, Article 4, Section 18, known as the Origination Clause. It states that all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. but the Senate may propose and concur with the amendments as on other bills. The next change is technical, Rule 4.13. It just updates the name of the new Committee on Government Operations and Elections Policy. Rule 4.16 is a technical change updating the name of the Committee on Civil Law and Data Practices. Rule 6.01 strikes the former committee structure and their names and inserts the new committee structure and their names. And finally, Rule 8.01 inserts the new name of the Committee on State Government Finance. And those are the changes.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Members have questions on the rules. Representative Joachim.
Joachim.
Oh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quick question, and probably really basic. I understand that Rule 4.11 is in the Constitution. I'm just kind of looking for a definition of, and I'm sure it's cited somewhere else, of what raising revenue is. For example, I have a bill up in committee tomorrow that raised revenue in the form of savings to the general fund. Would that be considered a rule that's a bill that's raising revenue?
Madam Chair, members, a bill that I'm not familiar with the bill you have up, but a bill that saves money from the general fund wouldn't be raising revenue; it would be lowering expenditures.
Okay.
A bill that raises revenue, and the courts have interpreted this as a bill that has a substantial purpose of raising revenue. Could be an increase in a fee. It could be an increase in a tax.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted some clarification.
Representative Thiessen.
Just to follow up on that. So, I mean, this is the same language that we have in the Minnesota Constitution. So is it the intent when changing this that you're going to follow the interpretation that how courts have interpreted the Minnesota Constitution, or are we trying to do something different by putting it into rule here today?
Thank you, Mr. Minority Leader. We're just adding emphasis and clarity. There should be no difference, really. It's just emphasizing it and providing clarity. Sometimes the membership will cite the Constitution, and we have the rules in front of us. I mean, it means the same thing.
Okay, and if I can, just to be clear, so if a point of order were to rise on the floor about the meaning of this rule, the speaker would follow how the Constitution has interpreted, how the courts have interpreted the constitutional provision, or is there something more that's going on here?
Thank you, Minority Leader Thiessen. Well, of course, the speaker isn't here to answer that question, but the intent is to not do anything different, just to interpret it the way the Minnesota Constitution is. Now, whether he's going to memorize the court cases or that type of thing, that's an entirely different question, seeing as how he's not an attorney, but the intent is just to have it both here and in the as well as the Minnesota Constitution. So I don't see that there would be any difference whether a member were to cite it from the Minnesota Constitution or from the rules.
Okay, thank you. I had another question on a separate subject.
Sure.
So on the lobbyist changes, what thought has gone into, I'm assuming we're going to have to change our ethics committee procedures and rules around this because we don't have jurisdiction over lobbyists now, and we will. So what action has been taken on kind of amending those procedures to make sure that we're ready to go? You know, if a complaint could be filed tomorrow, but Friday, I suppose,
sure,
after these rules are adopted, what is the ethics committee going to do with regard to, I know that the Senate has a whole other set of rules now that they put in place to deal with this issue. Do we know what those rules are and what we could be looking forward to in the ethics committee?
Thank you, Minority Leader Thiessen. So if they were to pass, they would, yes, I think the ethics committee would take a look at it and put rules in place. We did want to be consistent with the Senate, so we would look to see how they are doing it, so it would be more in line, hopefully, with the Senate. So, yes, we would charge the ethics committee with looking at the Senate rules and procedure and putting those in place.
And, Madam Speaker, do we know what the Madam Majority Leader, do we know what the consequences are in the Senate for a violation of this complaint? And I know in the Senate it's private. Are we planning on keeping those the resolution of the complaints in the House private, or will they be public like they would be against members?
Thank you, Minority Leader Thiessen. My intent would be to have the Ethics Committee look at it and make those decisions.
Okay. And I guess one more question. The other thing we talked about when we talked about this earlier is how this affects citizen, like a person like Rich Neumeister or citizen lobbyists who come here. I mean, I don't want to get our constituents or other citizens who come up here, you know, caught up in this rule. And I'm assuming if maybe Mr. McCormick could talk a little bit about that, about how clear the rule is about who a lobbyist is and who isn't. I mean, I know that you got to be, it's a little bit circular in the sense that if you're a registered lobbyist, then it applies to you, but it's a problem if you're not registered. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, members, the new rule specifically defines a lobbyist in accord with statutes. So under 10A.03.06, lobbyists must be registered, and there's a specific set of standards of what a lobbyist is. That definition, by carrying it through into the rule, would protect a person like Rich Neumeister, who is refers to as a citizen lobbyist. All the citizens are free to come up and lobby for any cause they would like, but a person who is a paid representative of a interest or a principal, as is defined, has to be registered. So a complaint could not be brought against a citizen lobbyist under this rule, only against a registered lobbyist.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Majority Leader. Just so a couple of follow-up questions on that. So how does this procedure differ, if at all, from the Senate's procedure? Like, is this sort of the exact same language, or have we made a few modifications, or how does it compare?
Thank you, Representative Pinto. It's my understanding that it's the exact same language.
Okay. And is the plan then that if a complaint is brought, that at that point the Ethics Committee would sort of develop rules that would apply to both that complaint and then to future complaints? This is against a lobbyist.
I'm sorry, say the question again.
I guess what I'm asking is, I was just following up on kind of the timing. It sounded like from what I understood you saying in response to the question from Representative Thiessen, that the rules would be put into place or procedure would be put into place by the Ethics Committee kind of if a complaint were to be brought against a lobbyist. Because right now the rules, I guess the procedures that the committee has really apply to members as opposed to lobbyists. So I'm just trying to understand how that would work.
Thank you. Mr. McCormick, do you know how they did it in the Senate? That's a good question.
Madam Chair, the Senate has a different set of procedures for ethics complaints than the House. The House has a detailed written set of operating procedures for the Committee on Ethics, which were recently adopted and are required to be adopted every 2 years when a new Committee on Ethics is formed. My assumption is that the House Committee of Ethics, we have a copy of the more general, vague operating procedures of the Senate. And my assumption is that the members of the Committee on Ethics will want to take a look at both this rule, the Senate procedures, and perhaps adopt a slightly different procedure. There are differences. For example, under this rule, any single member under oath in writing can make a complaint against a lobbyist, but under House rules, it takes two members to make a complaint against another member of the House. And so by looking at some of those rules, we will likely give counsel to the members of the Ethics Committee on whether they need new procedures or whether these can be retrofitted. And that, by the way, that's a decision for the members of the Ethics Committee, not for us.
Thank you. So, did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Senator Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering what the genesis is for the new rule. Is there a problem or a situation that came up that we felt that we hadn't addressed in the past and we felt we needed this rule, or why are we doing it?
Thank you, Representative Portman. A member suggested it, and it seemed to be in alignment with the Senate and makes sense. I think that the lobbyists who are here before us testifying every day have as much accountability as we do. So I think it makes sense, and agreed with the member that brought it forward, and that's certainly something we can discuss here. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just to follow up on Mr. McCormick's comments. You know, he mentioned that
a lobbyist is defined kind of in terms of being having gone through the registration process. I guess I'm not sure I'm seeing that here. It, you know, the first instance of the word lobbyist is on line 8.31. It says a lobbyist shall not appear before House committee unless the lobbyist is in compliance with the law. So, I mean, I kind of read that to say if the person is a registered lobbyist, they have to be in compliance with all of the registration provisions. But I guess I don't know. I don't see anywhere that specifically would exclude a citizen lobbyist or, for example, a representative, an agency, a legislative liaison at an agency who's essentially lobbying on behalf of the agency. So I'm just wondering if that, if I mean, there aren't definitions usually in House rules as far as I know, but I'm just wondering if that is in here somewhere.
Mr. McCormick?
I'm sure you're right. There are usually typically not definitions in House rules. I can work offline with you maybe to see if there's a clarification you would like for this. It's been treated in the Senate as a implicit to the rule that the citation of the statutes means that this applies to lobbyists. I haven't talked with the Senate counsel, and that was what I was told. And we can look at if there's tightening of the language that makes sense or not.
Madam Chair, can't we just
reference
the definition in one more sentence? It seems fairly straightforward that way. I just think it would be good clarity. I just think it would be good clarity to put the definition referenced in there so we don't get a resident of ours or a constituent of ours coming in getting caught up in this.
Sure. That's fine. While he looks that up, I think that would be a friendly amendment. Certainly we don't want to have our citizen lobbyists, because really any person that comes and testifies is a citizen lobbyist, so that certainly wouldn't be the intent of that change. So while he's working on that, somebody have a question? Representative O'Driscoll.
Maybe a comment, and then I'd like to just follow up on something that Representative Thiessen raised earlier. I think that what Representative Freiberg was referring to was government affairs persons that may be involved with our different agencies, and I think that we would still want to look at having them be covered under this if we're going to do it, because they do make certain representations on behalf of the agency. So I would just ask Mr. McCormick to consider that. To the point for Representative Thiessen, the minority leader, lines 1619 through 1621, where we were inserting the constitutional definition, and you were indicating based on court interpretations of the Constitution. Is there anything in particular that you were concerned about, a particular case or a particular conflict in definitions from your experiences working in the legislature, or is it just more of an inquiry?
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. No, I just was trying to understand exactly, since we're putting duplicative language authority in the Constitution in here, I just was wondering if there was a different intent there. And so if there's not, that's fine.
Madam Majority Leader.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I appreciate the Minority Leader's clarification on that, because my understanding would be if the Supreme Court ruled on it, there was a court ruling, that's what we would end up having to go by with that language and interpretation of the law. So I was just wondering if there was something that you were thinking that needed to be corrected in statute or another to bring that into a line. But my assumption would be it's already been resolved through the courts and or legislative action.
Yeah, the courts have ruled on it a couple of times in specific instances. So that's helpful for us to know.
You have an answer, Mr. McCormick?
Members, in order to tighten this to the current statutory definition of lobbyists, on page 8, line 31, it would now say a lobbyist as defined under Minnesota Statutes 10A.01, subdivision 21, that would tie to the current statutory definition, and that statutory definition is extensive and individual engaged for pay or other consideration of more than $3,000 from all sources in any year for the purpose of attempting to influence legislative or administrative action or the official action of a metropolitan government units by communicating or urging others to communicate with public or local officials. It also ties to people who spend more than $250 in any year for the purpose of attempting to influence. It specifically does not include public officials, employees of the state, elected local officials, other folks along that line. So that definition would conform this statute to the statutory definition of a lobbyist.
So do we need to make that as an amendment?
Madam Chair, if the intention is to conform it, yes, that would be an amendment to the rules.
Representative Thiessen, would you like to move that?
Sure.
Okay. Is everybody clear what the Thiessen amendment does, the language? Do I need to restate that? Any discussion? I think it adds some clarity. I think it's a good amendment. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman. I'm sorry, I don't know why I might have blanked your name all of a sudden.
That's funny.
I know, I've served with you for 10 years, and all of a sudden I had a, I'm like, I know it starts with an H.
And I broke my microphone. So. Madam Chair, I do think before we take this up on the floor, we should look at whether the language from 9.1 to 9.5 is unconstitutional. The Eighth Circuit in the last year just ruled on a complaint procedure related to groups trying to influence ballot questions, and the Eighth Circuit ruled something to the effect of having a complaint procedure such as this could chill free speech, and I'm just not certain that the language that you have from 9.1 to 9.5 under the Eighth Circuit's current application of the First Amendment, whether it's constitutional or not, but I'm not prepared to really debate it further today. Just raise the issue for you to look into.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hortman. We'll look into it. So we find out, I mean, it has been, I don't, do you know, Mr. Montgomery, do you know how long this has been in the Senate rules, the section, by any chance?
No.
We'll look into see how long, what we, if the Senate has had any feedback on that as well, and to see what year that they put these into place.
Madam Chair, I think that the Eighth Circuit case is in the last year, and I want to say it pertains to Minnesota Statute 215B, somewhere in there. I'm not sure that I have the site correct, but...
Okay, well, we'll look at that before we take these up on the floor and see if we can find any information. Are there any other questions to the proposed amendments or proposed rules? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So can you just explain 3.22, what the purpose is of the addition to the... this addition of Clause B, I feel like I understand what it's doing, but just wondering about the purpose of it.
Sure.
Thank you.
An amendment to an amendment may not increase a tax or fee unless the underlying amendment increases the tax or fee in question. So with the rules that have been in place the last few years, it would simply say that if you're doing an amendment to the amendment, it wouldn't change to have a different fee or tax, and it's just a attempt at transparency. I just think that people deserve to know what the taxes and fees are that are being proposed, and that when you change it, it seems like it's not quite as transparent.
Madam Chair, if transparency, I was trying to understand, this would say that it cannot increase the tax or fee. I don't know if with transparency... because I see with A it can be done, but it needs to have a roll call vote. B it says it can't be done. Can't be done at all. Is there? I guess I'm trying to understand the transparency. What you're going for there with transparency, if it can't be done in the first place.
So if an amendment says we're going to raise the AIS sticker fee by $3, the amendment to the amendment can't increase that to something beyond that. Cannot increase a tax or fee beyond that. If it's in a different area. So unless it's the underlying amendment increases the tax or fee in question. I don't know if that makes sense or not. Representative Freiberg.
I don't know that I... just regarding your example, I just want to make sure I'm clear on that point. So if an underlying amendment would increase an AIS fee by $3, then there is this qualifier here. It says unless the underlying amendment increases the tax or fee in question, so that would do it. So I would say then the first part doesn't apply because that's an amendment to increase a fee. And actually, the way I read it, I mean, since it does that, then it seems like you could actually have a secondary amendment to raise it to $100.
Yeah, Representative Freiberg, I probably didn't explain that very well, but it can't do it if it, it's just saying that if it doesn't have that in, it can't do it. It can't do it in the amendment to the amendment. So you can't put that in, and then in the amendment to the amendment, put all of a sudden put a fee or tax in that wasn't there in the amendment to start with. That's all. So if you want to to do that, if you want to have a tax increase or fee increase, then you do it in the original amendment. So you still have the ability to do it, just not in the amendment to the amendment. Any other questions on the proposed rules? No. Okay, I still have to move them, so I will move the adoption of the permanent rules of the House. As amendment, yep. I move the adoption of the permanent rules of the House as amended. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. They are adopted. Anything else we need to address? That's it, members. The Rules Committee will adjourn.